The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt Boone
Media Productions. You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
Fresh off last week's dope episode with one half of Crime Time, JTG, we are back this week. It's hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday, another episode of Why It Ended. And Matt, how are you feeling, my bro?
I'm doing really good. Man, and what a great episode it was last week. JTG gave us so much. Talked about Hulk Hogan, talked about the rise of Crime Time, talked about everything. It was another great show for the Why It Ended fans.
He even said he took bus rides from New York to Louisville once a week for a two-hour training class. Think about that.
That's crazy, man. I don't know if I could be that dedicated to anything, quite honestly.
Yeah, well, you know what I'm dedicated to, and so are our fans, and that's Why It Ended. Did you see that segue? I am getting good at this, man.
You know, it'd be better if you didn't point it out. Like, if you point it out, it ruins it.
The first few times, it still kind of feels good when I hit. Okay, so guys, you're following us on Twitter at Why It Ended, Instagram at Why It Ended, YouTube, whereitended.com, Pro Wrestling Tees, get our shirts, and of course, we appreciate all the love that you give us on Patreon. I'm a busy guy, Matt's a busy guy, we've been behind, but now we are catching up, because this week you're going to get your episode early, and in addition to that, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, I'll speak for myself, because work and everything else has me slammed. We have not done 100% right by our patrons, but we are going to starting now, and we appreciate you guys, past and current, and we're going to keep growing this and make this the best bonus content you can possibly get. We'd like to thank Brian Rapp and Kerry Gorotowski and James Donnelly. He's always interacting with us on social media. Jason Bassett, Jeremy Bagley, John Johnson, Josh Dunn, JP Hines, and Robert Anderson, who have become Patreons and are loyal Patreons of our patreon.com/whyitended. Thank you guys so much. We're going to add a bunch of new stuff for you right away.
Yeah, and we appreciate it. All your Patreon money is going back into things for the show, whether it's microphones, whether it's, you know, our live guests that are going to be at StarCast or for a future live show. So it's only helping out the show and making it continue to be free.
And some of that money will go to maintain what I think is the second worst hairdo in all of wrestling, Robbie E's haircut. And you're taking that haircut to Tennessee, aren't you?
Yep, that's right. October 13th. I'm talking about it again because it's one of my favorite places to wrestle, Overdrive Pro Wrestling. And it has just been announced that my opponent is going to be a former hardcore icon. And we're going to reveal who that is next week right here on Why It Ended.
Well, that's fantastic, Robbie. And today, we're going kind of old school. We had JTG last week, and this week we have none other than the Birdman, Coco Beware.
I wish we could have got I guess we can't because he's dead. It would have been cool to get Frankie on with him, too.
Apparently, Frankie is dead, but we're going to find out.
I mean, the bird talks. We might have been able to be a guest, man.
This just did. Frankie's dead, but Coco's still with us, and we are going to interview him right after this on Why It Ended.
Stop using your hand. .com.
Now, of course, you know by now about our great sponsor, Pleasure Products USA. They are a huge supporter of Why It Ended and also your online destination for innovative quality and affordable items geared towards men's sexual pleasure. As you know, or you probably should know, their signature product is the 3V Starlet Stroker. That's right, the 3V Starlet Stroker. It has an amazing, realistic internal texture, multiple vibration settings, and for the finishing maneuver, an actual voice of an adult film star is recorded to the device to make more than the crowd pop. And today we bring you a special, exclusive deal from Pleasure Products USA to listeners of Why It Ended. All you got to do is go to stopusingyourhand.com/promo. That's stopusingyourhand.com/promo for a special deal for fans of Why It Ended. Check it out today. PleasureProductsUSA, StopUsingYourHand.com today. The Sellers Law Firm, LLC, is a law firm focusing on family law and criminal defense, while still providing a wide range of general legal services, from adoptions, child support, custody, divorce, and legitimation, to DUI, traffic tickets, misdemeanors, and felonies. The Sellers Law Firm is here to help you.
As a proud member of the Griffin Downtown Council and several legal organizations, the Sellers Law Firm strives to serve the local...
You were on a roll. Hold on. You were on a roll, man.
I don't know what any of these words mean. As a proud member of the Griffin Downtown Council and several legal organizations, the Sellers Law Firm strives to serve the local community while expanding its services throughout the state of Georgia.
Of course, if they can ever be of service, please let Judy, Bobby, or Jody know. That's what family is for.
Whether you find yourself in need of a lawyer now or whether you just want to ask a few questions, give them a call at 770-415-9848 at the Sellers Law Firm, where clients become family.
And you never know when you're going to need law services, so go ahead and follow Jody Sellers at Sellers Law Firm, S-E-L-L-E-R-S Law Firm. And they're also a sponsor of wrestling. Is that right, Rob?
Yep, UCW Hometown Throwdown and Summerfest. They're sponsoring August 11th. In Barnesville, Georgia.
Sellers Law Firm, LLC, where clients become family. All right, guys. Now, joining us today is someone that I watched when I started watching wrestling, and that is the legendary Coco Beware, WWF, WWE Hall of Famer, the Birdman. Coco, how you doing today?
Man, I am doing fantastic.
Hey, well, that's very good, man. We really appreciate you doing this. And we announced that you were going to be a guest on our show, and our fans, they're super excited to hear your story, man.
Oh, that's great. I am looking forward.
Oh, cool, man. What is your, what's your first memory of wrestling, Coco? Like, did you see it on TV? Did you see it live? How'd you get to see it for the first time?
Well, it's just like all the other wrestlers got involved. You had to go to a wrestling match. To become a wrestler, you was a big mark, and I was a big mark every Thursday night in my little hometown of Union City, Tennessee. And, you know, I just fell in love with the business, and I thought that, man, that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be that wrestler that I saw other guys was in the ring doing, and I said, man, I believe that's my trade.
Who were some of the guys when you were younger that you liked watching?
Well, back then, I know you guys probably would never heard of these guys because Herb Welch, LaVon Stone, Jackie Fargo. In fact, Jerry the King Lawler, I know you know heard of him.
I heard of Jackie Fargo also. Matt, any of those names you know?
Oh, yeah, I definitely know Jackie Fargo. And I think, Robbie, you just did a tag team match with Jerry Lawler not too long ago, right?
I've wrestled him a few times over the past few months, but so how many years before you was Lawler wrestling, Coco?
I guess I started, he was wrestling and I started the late 79.
That's crazy that he was wrestling and inspired you to wrestle. And here he is all these years later and Robbie's still wrestling him.
And beyond still wrestling him, he's still taking backdrops. And I actually saw, I was on a show with him a few weeks ago, and I watched him take three backdrops. He hits a drop kick. It's unbelievable.
I know it. I can't believe it. Yeah, I keep telling him, Jerry, you don't have to do that anymore. Stop that. He said, Coco, I feel great, man. He said, you know, this is what the fans wants to see me do and stuff like that, and I can't let them down. I said, yeah, well, golly, you keep taking those bumps like that, you might have to let yourself down. You know,
I'm 34 years old, and I don't want to take one backdrop.
And I'm telling you, I don't either. I just can't take those bumps and come off the top rope. The Birdman is kind of, you know, I got a T-shirt saying limping ain't easy.
Hey, so in coming out of that area, that Tennessee area, you had all kinds of awesome territories. At the time, you know, you had, of course, Memphis, which is where Lawler was and where you kind of got your first fame. What was it like, you know, working with Jimmy Hart and him managing you? And also you got to tag team with Steve Kern and also Bobby Eaton. I mean, that must've been a great experience for you as a young wrestler.
Yes, it was. I mean, I started out with Bobby Eaton and me and Bobby Eaton, and we call ourselves, we just named ourselves Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney came out with that Ebony and Ivory.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
So we was the Ebony and Ivory team back in the day.
Oh, that's like awesome. That's awesome.
I mean, we was like the first black and white tag team, and we was awesome that everybody claim to, you know, tell us that, hey, how awesome we were and stuff like that. But, you know, and Bobby and I had great timing together. And then I moved on from Bobby Eaton. And then I got a great opportunity to team up with another great, outstanding black athlete wrestler, Norvell Austin. I don't know if you heard of him.
Sure. You got, we're the PYTs.
He's one. Yeah, we was the PYT Express, and who gave us the name? Jerry the King Lawler. Jerry the King Lawler was the Vince McMahon back in the day. He could come up with all kind of ideas. He came up with the Kamala, Ugandan Giant. He came up with the Rock and Roll Express for those guys. I mean, he came up with the Midnight Express.
Oh wow! I never knew that.
Jerry Lawler was a genius when it comes down to booking and coming up with ideas and stuff like that. He was great. I mean, if you go back and look at a lot of the old tapes now that what Lawler have done, he brought everybody in that came through Memphis and on their way to the WWF back then, you know, that really came through Memphis. I mean, you know, even Andre the Giant, I mean, he stopped there and had a match with Jerry Lawler. Sure. And stuff like that.
And, you know, speaking of money, that Memphis area, especially, you know, when you were there, they were selling out every week, right? They had weekly shows, and every week was hot.
Oh, man. 11,000 people at the Mid-South Coliseum. I mean, that was just like a WrestleMania, you know, doing 72,000. But back then, the Coliseum only hold 11,000. But it was packed, man. It was just like being in a big route in WrestleMania 3, 93,000 people. I mean, that's where it felt like, you know. I'm just glad I was a part of it because, I really, really worked hard, and I had a lot of guys, a lot of guys in this business, and they helped me. They tried their best to help me to get where I wanted to be at. And I still want to thank them for it because I want for those guys, a lot of promoters and a lot of women wrestlers out there. I mean, let's give them credit. You know, they helped me, you know, I have some good lady wrestlers friends and stuff like that, that now the ladies out there today, now they getting a little exposure off of WWE. They call themselves the Divas, but they get more of their recognition now. You know, hey, you gotta take the Divas off.
Coco, when you were in Memphis, how many nights a week would you typically work?
Well, we would go on Monday nights. We have the Mid-South Coliseum. We would go to Louisville on a Tuesday. We would go to Evansville on a Wednesday. We would go to Lexington, Kentucky on a Thursday, and then we'd come back and go down to Tupelo, Mississippi on a Friday, and then we would go to Nashville or Jonesboro on a Saturday night. So we just had to make the loop. We was on the road, and then on Saturday morning, of course, we did the TV taping in Memphis, Tennessee on Channel 5.
So you were pretty much wrestling every day almost.
So yes, that was we was on the go, man, and that's how you really get polished by working with guys like Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee and just back then that was the main two guys that everybody wanted to get make to wrestle that main event spot, to get in there and make some little extra money that they don't see on their paycheck and stuff like that. And that's, you have to get in there with Jerry Lawler and stuff like that, because he was the king of Memphis. And if you wrestled all those towns with him, you made good money. And especially main event, you made good money.
Now, at the time, you're this young and up-and-coming guy, and you're good, and people like you, and you're over, and all that. What were your dreams at that point? Did you want to go up north, or did you want to stay where you were? Did you want to become a world champion? Like, what was your big goal, your big dream?
Well, see, I had to realize that I wasn't the tallest man in the world, and I had to realize my spot, so I had to really wrestle those big guys and make things logical, so it won't be so stupid or embarrassing where how's a big man doing that off of this little guy here. So I didn't want a little guy to go. I didn't want a big guy to go off his feet when he wrestled with me and stuff like that. But I knew the way I wanted to get over with the people and make the fans out there believe that, hey, I am a little tough little cookie and stuff like that. And I wanted the sympathy from the fans going in there wrestling big guys like Nikolai Volkov. You know, God bless his heart. He's gone on to glory. But you know, he helped me out a lot and stuff like that. But that was my thing, is knowing my role. And a lot of these guys at my age today, they don't know their role in professional wrestling. There's no way that I could beat Andre the Giant. There's no way.
How tall are you, Coco?
Okay, I'm like 5'7".
Okay.
But still, comparison to Andre the Giant.
Well, yeah, unless you had a gun or some kind of weapon or something, it's going to be hard to take down.
The only way I want to beat those guys is with a gun or anything like that, or having a 2x4 in my hand and stuff like that, and then come behind him. I could come behind him and bust him in the head. And people is definitely going to believe that, but they're just not going to believe me going out there and beating Andre the Giant 1, 2, 3, and say, wow, how did this little midget do that?
You know, it's funny because my co-host, Matt Kuhn, apparently he's actually almost as big as Andre the Giant. Is that true, Matt, right?
I'm a big guy. I'm 6'4", and, you know, I weigh a lot.
But, maybe not as big as Andre, but... Hey, so how did you start talking to the WWF?
Well, actually, you know what? When I first got a phone call, I was down in Miss South working for the promoter, Bill Watts, and... You know, the boys love to rib each other all the time. You know, they like to call you up and put a rib on you and stuff like that. And it was just hard to believe if you get a phone call from anybody and you think it's one of the boys is pulling your leg and all that stuff.
We've heard that so many times, man. We've heard that so many times.
Yeah. I get a call from Howard Finkel, and Howard said, I mean, his voice, man, I knew that was Howard. I mean, I didn't really know that it was Howard, but I heard his voice so many times, but I said, no, that can't be Howard. So when Howard said, hey, Coco, hey, this is Howard Finkel from the WWF. Vince McMahon told me to give you a call and see what you love to come up and talk to him about making a move, coming and work for us. And I said, get out of here. I said, what would Vince McMahon want? What do you want to do with? Why would he call me of all people? He said, I kept saying, this can't be Howard. This cannot be. Yes, it is, Coco. I'm telling you, this is Howard Finkel. I'm telling you, I'm not pulling your leg or anything like that. And he said, I tell you what, here's the number. Write it down and then call me right back. Here's a 203 number. Okay. And I called the WWE number, 203 number and all that. And hey, it was a Connecticut number, because I looked in the book. I said, oh, my God, okay, it is Connecticut. Boom. So, and then you know, when I got to talking to Howard, I mean, when I started talking, and I said, okay, I believe you. I said, now, Howard, I believe you, because I thought the boys was ripping me. He said, when we watch you and on tapes, we have sent scouts down to the Mid-South Wrestling and sit out in the audience and stuff like that. And we would love for you to come up, just thinking about coming up and working for us, if you would love to make that move. And then I said, well, I don't see nothing wrong with it. I said, but let me run this across Bill Watts. And because he said, oh, yeah, I definitely want you to run it by Bill. And I want you to do it on your off day. Don't do it on your working day. Just do it on your off day that you're off from Bill. And I said, okay, we will do that. So I had a meeting with I got a hold of Watts, and I had a meeting with Watts, and Bill was he wasn't a really happy camper and stuff like that, but we got to talking. In fact, we went to a hotel and we just sat down in the room, and Bill and I was talking and going on, and he was saying, Coco, you know, they're not gonna do anything with you because you're too short, and they just don't. They just don't do anything with short guys and stuff like that. They just, you know, they just gonna job you out and stuff like that. And I said, well, Bill, you know, I said, but Bill, you don't have any plans for me down here yourself, and you're not doing anything with me. At least I need to go up there and see what he's got to offer me, because you're not offering me anything, and I haven't said anything to you because. Yes, my wife has got a job, and we kind of put two and two together, and that's how we make it. I said, but I just hadn't really just came to Bill. I need more money to, and because I knew how green I were with the business, so I didn't push that at all on you. And I just said, I just want to go up and see what they have to offer, and because if I don't go up and see what they have to offer me, I will regret that the rest of my life. And so Bill said, well, okay, well, I can understand that. Well, you just go ahead and have a meeting with them, and then come back and let me know what you want to do and stuff like that. But I guarantee you they're not going to do nothing with you at all. I said, well, let me at least go see what's happening. Well, I went, got hold of Howard again, told Howard what was going on. They got the plane ticket and all that. I went up, I met with McMahon and stuff like that. And that's how I got started in WWE. At the end of the conversation, I liked what he was saying and stuff like that. And what we agreed on some, just didn't really agreed on money, just agreed on talent, just coming in and work, a handshake, okay. You know, wasn't a contract, anything with money on it and all that stuff. And times have changed now, but I was just so happy. You know, I said, man, God bless me with enough, took me to another level. You know, and I said, okay, I'm gonna go up there and do my very, very best and stuff like that. And then my wife she was inside this bird store, and. She took a picture of this bird with a Polaroid camera. She had one. Just so happened she had a Polaroid camera that day. And she said, honey, I tell you what, if this question ever come up, I want you to show Mr. McMahon. I was already the Birdman Coco Beware. I just had birds on my tights and all that. And she said, if it comes up, I want you to show him this picture. Then that way, he might be able to get this bird for you, and you would be fully the bird man. You know, you have the bird tights on, then you have a real live bird, and the kids will love you for that and stuff like that. So, and as the conversation was over with McMahon, Vince just happens to stop, say, Coco. I turned around. He said, is there, for some reason now, I don't even know why he even came up. He even said that because nothing was mentioned about a parrot. He said, do you have anything else to go with that you want to go along with your gimmick? And I said, Lord, praise God. And I flipped out this bird, and he looked at the bird. He said, what in the world? He said, oh my God, now we got a, we have a snake. Now we have a snake. Now we have a bulldog. Now we have a dragon. Now we're going to have a bird. He said, Vince said, you know you're going to have to carry this all, you're going to carry it all over the world? I said, Vince, wherever I can take him, I said, that's going to be part of me. That's going to put me up there with Hulk Hogan, with Andre the Giant. That's going to put me over with all the top guys. And Vince said, okay, we'll definitely get this bird for you. And, man, that first night in Baltimore, Maryland, Vince flew some fella down in South America, Brazil, and got this wild bird and put him in a cage, and he wasn't tamed, anything like that. Pat Patterson and myself was at the TV in Baltimore. We was trying to get the bird out of the cage. The bird wouldn't come out of the cage. We had to disassemble the cage to get the bird out. Then the bird was trying to fight. He was striking on me, and Pat Patterson going, Coco, are you sure you want this? You want to have this, take this bird out there? I said, Pat, that's part of my gimmick. I got to do this. He's wild. He's trying to fight. He's chewing up wood. He's biting on the cage and everything. I said, I know it, Pat, but I gotta try to tame him some kind of way. And, Pat was going, I don't know. I'm a hippie, you know, dissembling and everything, but it's going to be on, you're going to be on your own. Coco, what are you going to do? I said, you got to carry him out tonight. I said, yes, I'm going to carry him out tonight. So we put a towel over his head and stuff like that. And so we quieted him down, and we put this little old chain around his ankle. And that was the first and the last time that the people in the wrestling world saw me come out with a bird with a chain on his leg. And because I work with him, I work with this bird 24/7, day and night. Got in the hotel that night, got to working with Frankie, got to working with him and working with him and working with him. And then, we just bonded together. And then I had to go to a pet store. He didn't know how to talk, so I went in this pet store and I got a tape recorder, and it was like 2 hours long, and it would repeat itself. Hello, hello, hello.
That's awesome.
But then I started training him how to talk and stuff like that.
With your success with Frankie, you know, and of course it was very much like a zoo in the WWE. I'm sure it was quite a scene with, as you said, a dragon, a bulldog, and a bird and a snake. You kind of started getting some attention. You know, you beat Nikolai Volkoff on Saturday Night's Main Event. You also had a match against Randy Savage on Superstars. Did you ever think that maybe you would get a chance at that Intercontinental belt?
They primed me for the Continental belt and stuff like that. It looked like it was getting me ready. And then it kind of went the other way and stuff like that. But you know what? It would have been a little bit too much for me at the time, because when I had the parrot, that was just like carrying a piece of weight around itself, that suitcase and cages and all that stuff. So the belts, the Intercontinental belt was real heavy at the time and stuff. So I wanted to be a Continental champion. Any time, I'm sure every wrestler out there wanted to be any kind of champion, especially coming from the WWE and stuff like that, you know. But I already thought I had my little champion, and that was the bird.
For sure. And, you know, of course, thinking about champion-like moments, you got to wrestle against Butch Reed at WrestleMania 3, one of the most famous and one of the most well-attended wrestling events of all time. When you think of WrestleMania 3, what is the first thought that hits your head?
Man, I just could not believe it when we rode up in those big buses and the people was laying all around the Coliseum or whatever they was, big theater or whatever that, I'm just saying, that big building, put it that away. Okay, I'm excited right now. But I mean, man, it was just like, I thought the people, you know, in fact, over in the Desert Storm, there wasn't that many bodies laying out like there were over in Detroit. I mean, Pontiac, you know, they had people laying all out like they was, I mean, they was all camped out, ready for WrestleMania and stuff when we drove up. I mean, whew, man, it was something. And I was just took a pink because here it was, my mind started to thinking. I was had tears in my eyes and stuff like that because here it is. I came from a little small town of Union City, Tennessee. I said, here this little black boy here from a little small town of a population of 10,000 people. Here I am in Pontiac, Michigan, wrestling in a big 93,000 in front of 93,000 people in this dome here.
You know, did you know how many people were going to be there going into it? Like, did it not hit you until you got there? Like, there's no way they could be that many people there. Like, were you thinking
I didn't have a clue because that was my first WrestleMania. See, I wasn't in one and two. I was in three.
Wow. And so you just walked up and saw this, and it was just unbelievable.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And my mind just went back, you know, saying that, I mean, here it is, where I have been and where I'm at now and what's going to be next. What level that I'm going to have next? I said, this is the granddaddy of all. I mean, I don't know if I'd be able to top WrestleMania 3. You know, when it took them 30 years to beat our record.
Hey, when you first got to WWF, did you know a lot of guys in the locker room already, or was it a lot of new guys when you got there? And did anyone give you a hard time, or maybe a hard time about the bird? Like, did you have any problems?
Well, I'm gonna tell you who the guy that really got me over, and he worked in Memphis on his way up, and that was Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan came into Memphis, Tennessee. Him and Beefcake, actually, they went as brothers. Eddie and Terry Boulder in Memphis, Tennessee. Hulk came in. He was real, real green, 300-some pounds. And, man, he looked out. He just looked unbelievable. Didn't even look real, just a man, for a man. And the booker of Memphis had them to do some things, one or two things in the ring, and Hulk was very unhappy with it, and Beefcake was very unhappy with it. They told Hulk, in right there in Memphis, I can't remember who was the booker, anyway, shoot the guy in and give him a barrel hug, just over and over and over. Drop him, shoot him in the ropes, give him a barrel hug, shoot him in the ropes, give him a barrel hug. Beefcake, I want you to pick a guy up and slam him, pick the guy up and slam him, probably about 10 times. And Hogan was doing the same thing about 10 or 12 times. And then after that, just drop down and just cover him. Cover, you guys get a double pin. 1, 2, 3. Y'all win the match. Well, that didn't sit well with Hogan. Hogan was, Terry was just very upset and stuff like that. He said, man, I want to do more. I want to do more and stuff like that. And I talked to Hogan and stuff like that. I said, Hogan, I said, my friend has got a wrestling ring in a barn. I would love for you and Eddie to come up, and we all go up there and work out, and I can show you the big man stuff, and that's all you need to know. But I want to know how to drop kick. I want to know how to do this. I said, you don't need to know. You don't want to know how to drop kick. I said, you too big for that. I said, that leave the drop kicks up for me and stuff, the high flyers and stuff like that. I said, you're the one coming in clotheslining somebody, dropping the leg and splashing somebody or whatever, you know. And Hogan said, really? He said, yeah, that's what the people want to see. You roll around, just not even on the mat. You just kind of using the ropes and stuff like that. And then if you're working with another giant in there, you can kind of take a knee, boom, you know, go off your feet a little bit right there. We'll just roll around the mat and stuff like that. But I said, he said, man, okay. He said, well, so we went on and had to work out and stuff like that. So I showed Hogan how to drop the leg and all that stuff on the guys and stuff. And Hogan, me and Hogan's today, we're excellent friends. I love the guy. And this whole time, I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to get back on my story. He never said any kind of racial thing. Never heard him say anything. And I don't know how that got out in the public or whatever. But, man, he never – I know him from way back, and we used to sleep in his green Lincoln, a town car. And when Hulk left Memphis, he left Memphis and he went to Minneapolis, Minnesota, working for Baron Gagne. Okay. He got in that Rocky movie and all that stuff. And that's where Vince McMahon was going around stealing all talent, taking all the top talent from all the small promoters. Okay. And then, in 1986, man, I got accepted in going to WWE, F, whatever. And when I was sitting there in the dressing room, Hulk Hogan walked in. There's a Paul Orndorff. There's all the Bob Orton Jr., Morocco, Mr. Fuji. All of them was in the dressing room and stuff like that. And Hulk came over to me and ran over and picked me up like I was a newborn baby and picked me up and just shook me. Oh yeah, you made it. And y'all, and then he turned around. He said, y'all, he pointed, he hugged me and stuff like that. He said, y'all know what? This little MF here, this little MF right here helped me in Memphis, Tennessee when nobody else wouldn't help me. He said, man, he showed me a lot of stuff. And man, said, cause we were starving to death and stuff like that. But he helped me to drop legs and toe holds and everything. Of course, all the guys just sitting back, oh my God, I didn't know Hogan, that you knew Hogan and everything. They come around shaking my hand and all this stuff. And Hogan said, welcome aboard, man. Welcome. Oh my God. You know, he said, I'm proud of you. You made it, you know, cause being Hogan lost contact and stuff like that. You know, he said, I was just trying to get hold to you and stuff like that. So I could give you, you know, maybe, hey, you weren't interested in coming up here and stuff like that, you know. But that's how Terry and I kicked everything off.
Hey, so guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Well, now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in the bedroom. Listen up.
BlueChew.com, and it's blue just like the color blue. Now, BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work.
And you can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises.
Blue Chew is prescribed online, and it ships straight to your door in a discreet package. Now, I know people who've gotten this package, and I'm telling you, that's the truth. So no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and the best of all, no more awkwardness.
And they're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a normal pharmacy.
And right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free. You can get it for free. What do you have to lose when you use our special promo code, Robbie? All you have to do is just pay the $5 shipping.
And again, guys, that's BlueChew.com and promo code Robbie. Not Robbie E, Robbie. Try it free today.
And it's Blue Chew, B-L-U-E, chew.com. And it is the better, cheaper, faster choice. And thanks for sponsoring the podcast. Now, I'm not lying. I know some guys who have gotten Blue Chew and they swear by it. So give it a chance today, bluechew.com/Robbie. You were the first person to ever get pinned by the Perfect Plex. And in Survivor Series, you're the first person to take the Tombstone Piledriver from The Undertaker. What was it like in that role for you towards the end of your run in WWF?
Well, you know, I love Mark to death, and I'm still proud of Undertaker today. You know, he really, really have, you know, took his gimmick a long, long way and stuff like that. But Mark was, you know, I was the first one that took the tombstone, but he was a little excited because that was his first time doing it. And I almost kind of cracked my neck a little bit, you know, of doing it. And cause I heard all kind of little cracks and stuff like that. And, but I knew Mark was trying to get over.
Did you get dropped on your head?
I got dropped on my head, you know, be honest with you. Yes. But, you know, thank God for working out and stuff like that. It kind of helps you. Now, if I had a weak heart, I mean, a weak head or something like that, I probably would have broke my neck big time.
And what you said, this was the first time that he ever gave it?
Yes, I was the first one that he used it on.
Wow. And you got, did you practice it? Did he pick you up in the back just to show you how it's supposed to be done or anything?
Not at all. He just, hey, this is what they want him to do. It was kind of like a pile driver, but he just had my head between his legs too far to the, you know, that you could see my head.
Right.
And if, you know, and if he had a head, my head back between the fat part of his thighs, then it wouldn't have hurt. You know, you just come down on that and it wouldn't hurt.
And it was a new move for him because it was a finisher for, I remember seeing it in WWF, Don Morocco using it as a finisher. But for Undertaker, it was a new move from him. And maybe when he had it, tried it out on you, he hadn't captured all the nuances of it quite yet.
Yeah, it was a new move for him that night at the Survivor Series. And, I just wanted Mark to get over real good, and I sold for him like $1 million and stuff like that. And I know when he did it, cause he jumped and when you're in the time, he just didn't rock back. He made that jump and then he came down. Well, when you make that jump, if you don't have my neck tight enough, my head is going to slip out.
So that could have been the first and last time he ever did the tombstone. I wonder what his finisher would have been if that didn't pan out for him. What do you think, Matt?
You know, he was probably going to still go with that old school, that clothesline off the top, you know, where he walks the ropes.
Yes.
Well, I don't know, but the tombstone, but that what he did for me was that put his gimmick over even more convincing, where he crossed my arms and stuff like that, and just like, you know, hey, I'm in the casket.
Yeah,
you know, and it worked, and it worked out. It was all benefiting his gimmick. I mean, and I was trying. If they had told me what they was gonna do, and he never did this before, then you know what, we would have walked through this because we was there early enough for us to do that. And I had the experience. See, that was my role with Hogan in WWE to work with the big guy so Hogan can try to draw money with them. See, if they went in there, Hogan said, would tell me a lot of times, Coco, go in the ring with this big guy here and see what can he do and stuff. See when he listen to you and stuff like that. How did he feel? If he's too hard or whatever, if he's too rough, you know what I'm saying? Because Hogan was, I'm telling you, Terry just didn't want, he did not want to get hurt. He couldn't afford to get hurt because they were selling out everywhere. And he, if you gave him a potato, what we call, I mean, using it like a crowbar, you would not make any money with Hogan back in the day.
Yeah, he would have said right away he didn't want to wrestle with you, right?
Oh, he would not want to wrestle with you. And now, if you look better than him, but if you was in there, you was real, real stiff, and he couldn't move you and all that stuff, and you hurting him and stuff like that, he's going to cut the program. He's going straight to Vince McMahon and cut the program from you, and you're not going to make any big money.
Jim Troy, who was an executive for WWE, you got in a fight with him, and that led to your first time, your departure from WWF?
Yeah, that was something uncalled for, and I still hate it today because Jim wasn't really that bad. He wasn't a bad guy, you know. He had problems. Things wasn't going right with him. I don't know if it's family-wise or business-wise with McMahon and stuff like that. And I really didn't – it wasn't my fight. It wasn't my fight at all.
It was Shawn Michaels' fight, right?
Yes, it was Shawn Michaels' fight. In fact, I was over there. We was all in the bar together. I was over there playing the piano, and I had some people around the piano, and I'm singing over there and stuff like that. I can play a little piano and stuff like that from my dad, you know, playing in the church. I play lead guitar in the church right now. I sing in the male chorus and stuff like that. And I'm just kind of use my little talent with just, I could play a little boogie woogie and the people was eating it up. And the waitress came over and asked me, said, are these your guys over there? I said, yes, they're my guys. He said, oh, would you mind going over? It looked like they're getting ready to fight. And we hate that. I said, can you at least go over and try to talk to them or whatever? And I just kind of went over there, and they was at nose to nose like two pit bulls, man, slobbing and spitting in each other's face and all that stuff and cussing each other, all foul language and everything. Then I just kind of tapped Sean on the shoulder. I said, Sean, come on, man. You're in charge. Y'all stop this. Stop it. And then Troy was just going on. Troy done had a little bit too much to drink, and he was going on telling how he hates putting up with these phony ass wrestlers, that Vince McMahon pays him a lot of money to put up these phony ass wrestlers. I'm a hockey player. I'm a lot tougher than you fucking wrestlers and everything. This exact words he's saying. And I hate using these kind of words, you know, but this is the words that he was saying. And God knows that I'm not lying on the man. I love Troy and I still love him. And I wish I could apologize for, on my part, what happened. Well, then when Troy turned around, looked at me, and he turned around, he said, oh, here's another phony-ass fucking wrestler, whatever. He has no fucking guts anyway. He has no guts at all. And I'm going, I said, Troy, come on, y'all, man, come on, stop this, man. And then Troy turned around and slapped me. Woo, man, I'm like Flair now. Let me take a deep breath. That's when the feathers
getting slapped came is worse up. Than getting punched, right? Getting slapped is more disrespectful.
Yes, the slap came, and after that, I said, well, Troy, I'm not Shawn Michaels, okay? And you already done slapped me. I said, now, Sean, I said, I'm getting it all messed up. Now, Troy, I said, you know what? I'm not Jesus Christ either. I don't have enough strength to turn the other cheek. And I turned around and I nailed Troy and I nailed him and I nailed him. And then finally now, Shawn Michaels didn't want to pull me off of Troy. Then I broke loose from Shawn Michaels. I said, don't touch me, son. This is your fight. I wasn't trying to fight this guy. This guy turned around and slapped the hell out of me. So we was fighting, and then I went back on somebody. A beer bottle broke on the floor, and I cut my left palm of my hand. I cut it. It was like I almost lost my middle finger over that. And so when I was bleeding, my hand was all blood was running everywhere, but I was still going. I was still going. And then Troy finally staggered out, and he jumped in the taxi, and he told the taxi, you know, get out of here. So now the hotel is up the hill. There's Coco Beware's is running behind the taxi, trying to get Troy. I'm running behind the taxi. Oh golly! And Troy's looking in the back of the mirror, looking at me. Oh, he telling the driver, go faster, because I would, if I could have jumped on that cab, I would have. And so I made it all the way up to the top of where the hotel was at. So I found Marty Jannetty. Now this is not a lie, guys. This is what I'm saying is the living truth. What happened on my dead wife and everything. This is what happened on my mother and father. I swear to this. When I got up to Sean, when I told Marty Jannetty, I found Marty, and I told Marty what happened. That Sean didn't fight the guy, and Marty went and asked the receptacle, said, "Give me the keys. Give me the keys to Jim Troy's room." So the guy, he was trying to find the keys. Marty jumped over the desk, receptacle desk, and told the guy, "Give me the keys. Give me the keys to his room right now." Because Marty thought he was in there. I said, "Marty, I don't think he's in there because he jumped in the taxi." So Marty, the guy finally gave him the keys. Me and Marty went to his room, Jim Troy's room. There's his clothes and everything. Marty Jannetty tore his bed up. I'm talking about broken off the lamps everywhere, dressels. I'm talking about just ripped his clothes and everything. Looked like a tornado hit that darn place. Then we went back up in the lobby, and I said, "We're gonna sit right here." I said, "I'm gonna sit right here. That Jim Troy is gonna come through these doors here in a minute." And what you know, about 30 minutes later, here comes Jim Troy coming through the door, and I'm sitting. They had a check-in desk, and then it was added on the kitchen, and all that. There's kitchen tables and all that was connected.
Sure.
And so when Troy came through the door, I said, "Troy, our fight is not over with, Jack." And I decked him right there. I decked him, and I beat the living crap out of Troy. I took my blood, and I just put it all over him. I said, "Yes, okay, yeah, this is what you – now, I got to bleed because you the one caused me to bleed and stuff like that." I said, "Yes, I beat the crap out of it." And I left when Marty pulled me off of Troy, I left Troy on the table. The last time I saw him, he was laying on the table knocked out on his back.
Hey, Robbie.
Now we go to the next day. Pat Patterson come up and said, "Coco, have you seen Jim Troy?" I said, "Where?
He's dead.
I hadn't seen him since last night. I hadn't seen him since last night." I said, "Is he still asleep?"
"He's dead."
You know. But he said, "Pat said, oh my God, Coco, you beat the crap out of me." And his wife was flying over to meet with Troy. She done flew all night. And Vince McMahon already told Troy, "Hey, get on the plane and go home. And tell your wife now she's got to do another 8 hours back flight back home." You know, she was jet lagged, tired and stuff like that. But then we get to Paris. Well, Terry Garvin, I get dressed. Hulk Hogan done had trouble with Jim Troy already over there. Him and Hogan like it got into it before we even arrived, what Hogan told me. And then Terry Garvin comes up to me and said, "Coco, by the time I got dressed, getting ready to go out to the matches and all that, go to the ring," he said, "Coco," he said, "Vince is on the line here. He wants to talk to you." And Vince, then when I said, "Okay," so I talked to Vince. "Coco, what the fuck is wrong with you fucking beating up my fucking executive? What the fuck is wrong with you? I can't fucking believe you even did that, Coco. God damn it, I fucking can't believe it." I said, "Vince, can I tell my story, Vince?
what story do you have to tell? You just beat the fuck out of him and stuff like that. Yeah, that's all you know, right? That's all. But let me tell my story then, Vince, okay? I said, your executive was already fighting Shawn Michaels. I'm the one pulled him off of Shawn Michaels and stuff like that. He turned around and slapped the hell out of me and all that. I said, what am I supposed to do? I said, he slapped the hell out of me. He told me to my face that you pay him a lot of fucking money to put up you fucking phony ass fucking wrestlers and all that stuff, that he's a hockey player. He's a lot tougher and everything like that. I said, Vince, do you know all of this? Well, I can't fucking believe it. But I tell you what, all I want you to do, Coco, pack your bags and go home, because I can't have my executive trying to jump on a wrestler and a wrestler trying to jump on my executive. Just pack your fucking bags and go home. I said, I'll do that. Okay. But I said, Vince, let me ask you one thing before I go. If I slap the hell out of you, are you going to turn the other cheek? Are you gonna turn the other cheek if I come up to you and slap the hell out of you, and you're supposed to be a real man? I said, what are you gonna do? You're gonna slap the hell out of me back. I said, I know that's what you're gonna do. I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I know what I'm saying. I want you to go home. So I went over and told Hogan what happened. I said, Terry, I'm leaving. Vince want me to go home and all that stuff. He over this Jim Troy stuff and all that. And Terry said, I tell you what, Coco, you go ahead and go on home. And if you don't come, if I don't bring you back, you will never see Hulk Hogan wrestling with WWE again. You will never see me. I will never wrestle again for WWE. And that's my word. You go on home. And he said, I have you back in there for a few weeks. And a few weeks, I was back in WWE. But Vince McMahon did it the old sneaky way. He waited about 6 or 7, 8 months while to cool off, everything cool off. And then he shit-canned me. He didn't give me no notice. He just told me he was done with me, that he wanted to switch talent around and all that stuff. And so that's the reason. That's how I left WWE, without a notice or anything like that. But I don't hate Vince McMahon. I don't hate the WWE. I still love the business. I still love them. But, you know, when I asked Vince about the booking, I said, Vince, I said, you got two towns running here. I said, my name is not on either one. Well, Coco, I gotta weave you guys out, you know, because I got to bring in new blood and all this stuff. I said, without a 2 weeks notice, your contract said a 2 weeks notice that I have to give you and you have to give me. I said, come on, Vince. Well, Coco, that's the nature of the business. You know how it is, you know. I'll fire my own mother if I had to over this business. I said, Vince, that's so cold-blooded wrong. You're just totally wrong on that. I'm telling you. I know what you're doing. You still pissed off over the Troy outcome and stuff like that, because maybe I kicked the shit out of your little buddy. I said, but if your little buddy the one started, you know, it wasn't my fight. And I told Vince McMahon to his face, I said, it wasn't my fight. I don't know why you're so mad at me, because I beat the shit out of him. I said, I'm sorry.
So you don't think that when you were brought back and you did high energy and all that stuff, you don't think there was a sincere effort to kind of push? You felt that Vince was harboring a resentment and that you were just on your way out regardless?
I knew it. I knew I was on my way out, especially when they're going to – here it is. Bobby Heenan wanted to put the high energy together. That was the first black and white tag team together, and we was outstanding. I mean, we was getting over. We was getting over. They were thinking about putting the belts on us and stuff like that, and Vince was not going. And then it came down with an angle shot with Bret Hart and Owen Hart. As Owen Hart was going to turn heel on Bret, or Bret was going to turn heel on Owen Hart, and they was going to have a brother versus brother match and all that stuff. You know, the people didn't want to see that. But, you know, and then after all that, that's what kind of weeded me out of it. You know, because I saw it coming. I saw it coming. And Bobby Heenan, God bless his heart, he the one told him, Coco, you know, get ready, man. Just get ready. You ain't hear nothing from me. You ain't hear nothing from me. Just get ready and prepare yourself. You know, try to find somewhere to go, whatever.
So what was life after that? Did you ever, anything, ever talks ever with WCW or anything?
Well, not at all. With like WCW, I knew Jeff Jarrett. I mean, he was there and stuff like that, but you know, it just, I don't know why they didn't even try to contact me, or I didn't even know those guys at the time and stuff like that. But I had a hell of an angle, cause my name, the Birdman Coco Beware, I gave it to the WWE. Vince McMahon them did not give me Coco Beware. The Birdman Coco Beware, they did not have that. That wasn't their trademark. So I could have took this. I could have took the Birdman Coco Beware anywhere.
So what did you do wrestling wise then? What did your wrestling career consist of after WWF?
Well, you know what? It was just my name. Thank God for all the other promoters around here, the small promoters and stuff like that, is keeping, you know, food on my table, keeping, you know, that I can feed my family and stuff like that. And then I go out on the weekends and sign autographs and stuff. And then God blessed me with a painting business. I have a paint business that we paint the interiors and exterior houses and stuff like that. I do a little sheetrock work, and you know, just hey, the stuff I had to learn when I got out of the business. I just couldn't sit on the couch and watch and let my wife go out there and do 8 hours a day, and I'm sitting on the couch with a pair of slacks on and some crystal, those what they call those crystal pants on with all pressed out and everything, right. Sitting on there watching that phone. You know, back in the day, everybody would just get cleaned up, and you sit there and every time the phone rang, you would think it was a promoter for a booking. You know, man, you just would not leave that phone. And back in the day, I remember you had to have a phone, and you had to have a car. I mean, yeah. To get a car so you can make the local towns.
And then 2009 came and you got the call to be in the Hall of Fame. What was who called you to tell you were going to get inducted?
Well, my good friend Howard again. Howard called me.
Did you believe him this time?
I believed it in, because I done worked for him and already. It took him 20 years to put me in the Hall of Fame. I show you, you know, that was a lot of fans. I want to thank a lot of fans that called in and sent letters and all that stuff. And it's a committee that the fans thinking they doing something, but they actually not doing anything. It's a committee that takes a vote, and just so happened, I guess, you know, he might have said, well, let's put Coco in there. Vince probably said, let's put Coco in there, because, you know, just kind of just win. Instead of coming saying, Coco, I'm sorry, you know, and stuff like that. But let's just go ahead and put him in the Hall of Fame and give him a little money and stuff like that. And $5,000, what they gave me, and a big old, I guess it looked like a big class, class ring. I mean, you know, but I cherish it and stuff like that. But I appreciate, you know, every little bit helps. But that's the only thing I got of. Now somebody else, they said whatever somebody else said they got out of the Hall of Fame, I don't know. But I got $5,000 and a ring for the rest of my life.
Wow, you know, I didn't know that guys got even paid at all to be in it. Did you know that, Matt?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more now, but not that much more.
Wow, either way, that's cool. I mean, still, and I'm
well,
sure
back
helped,
now back in the day, they told me that, I know, like in Tito Santana, back in the day, now they said they got 10 grand a piece, unless they were lying. Now, I don't know, because I didn't see the check. I mean, boys, you know, we can exaggerate a little bit.
And the 2009 Hall of Fame, even though you were In the first match that Raw ever had against Yokozuna, you were not called about the 25th anniversary, and you have not heard from WWF, WWE since that Hall of Fame. Is that correct?
Correct. I have not heard anything except for one time. Now let's go for one time. We did the Hall of Fame in Houston that Saturday night. They had WrestleMania. That Sunday night, they had Monday Night Raw in Memphis, Tennessee. Okay? And they asked me to come out there with my family to sit at ringside, and they're going to put the camera on me and stuff like that, just saying, hey, here's one of the inductees from the Hall of Fame from the WrestleMania this past weekend. They kept us out there so long. Don't you know they did that on the tail end of the show? I sat there from 7 o'clock, about 6:30 until about 10:15. Then that's when they showed a clip with me and my family. Oh yeah, by the way, we got the Birdman Coco Beware right here in Memphis, his hometown, and stuff like that. I mean, you know, man, I was exhausted. But you know what? I didn't say nothing. I took it. And you know what? That was the last time that I ever talked to them or spoke to them about coming up, for them even invite me on anything. Yes, I thought I should have been on the Yokozuna deal. And I was the first one on there. And Yokozuna loved me. He didn't. Hey, he gave me the splash and the turnbuckle. But you know what? He could have gave me the stink face. But if he didn't like you, he would give you the real stink face. He would go in the bathroom, and he would go in there and take a crap, and he would half wipe. He just take two tissues and tap on one side of his ass and on the other side of his ass, and you got a bunch of, you know what, in between it.
Oh God.
And when he pulls mama down, brother, you ain't got nothing. You can't get out of it, because boy, you'll see the Grand Canyon coming.
Hey Coco, so was it true that you actually held the Rock when he was a baby?
Yes, my wife used to babysit the Rock and everything, and. And, you know, he has a nickname, and his nickname is Dewey. That's the Rock nickname. And I'll tell you,
why was that his nickname?
I don't know. I mean, his dad and him, they named him Dewey. Rocky Johnson.
Was that, I guess you saw the Rock a lot when he was a little kid. Has it been kind of a shocking thing to you to see him grow into the star that he's become?
Everybody was kind of shocked on that, because you know you don't never know how life is going to turn out in this world and stuff, and I'm gonna say I helped Dwayne when he was really down and out, coming out of the Miami University. He was gonna go out trying to be a football player, but that fell through, And one day, Dwayne was on the couch, and he was just so frustrated, and he was just saying that, he's a man, you know what, I'm starving to death here in Memphis, Tennessee, and I'm just going to get me a real job and stuff. And I told Dewey, I said, look here, Dewey, this is what's going on. I said, you're a good-looking Hawaiian boy and stuff like that. The girls are screaming at you right now. And they're beating you every single night. But the little girls love you. They're screaming and hollering. I said, can you imagine if they did something with you? How the popularity would jump for you and stuff like that. And he said, well, Coco, you know, my dad has already burned a lot of bridges up in the WWE and stuff like that. I said, don't worry about what your father's doing. I said, y'all are two different people. I said, you know, just keep working out, keep your mouth shut. I said, but if you get a chance to go to what we call WWF back then, we call it New York. If you get a chance to go to New York, I said, you go up there and I want you to keep your mouth shut. Don't say nothing. Do whatever they want to ask you to do and stuff like that. And I said, Rock, I tell you, I said, I couldn't call him Rock then. I said, dude, I tell you that they might do something with you because they've been looking to prime a black wrestler for a title belt because they tried Tony Atlas and a couple of guys and stuff, but just didn't turn out. And I said, you, they might look at you as a different expert. And so, so I told them, I told Dewey, I said, just keep working out and just go ahead and, you know, if you make it there, you make it, you know.
Have you spoke to him at all since his huge success? Have you spoke to him?
You know what? That's the only thing. I really hate about it because, you know what, he never did pick up the phone and say, thank you, Coco, for those kind words and stuff like that. But that's, so, you know, maybe he didn't have time. I understand that. You know, I don't have time, but you just never forget, you know, where you came from.
For sure. And there's one other question that we have to ask you that a wrestler friend of us sent us, because there's a tape of you on YouTube that a lot of the wrestlers talk about. And it's a match of you in 1985 against, enhancement talent, preliminary wrestler. I guess he was going by the Patriot at the time. And you, from my eyes, you absolutely destroy this guy and clothesline him really hard. And after the match is over, you slap him across the face. Are you aware of the match we're talking about?
You know what? It was just like wasn't nothing that the Patriot did to me, anything like that. And we were just taught back then to make things kind of more realistic and not really try to just beating the heck out of the guy or anything like that, because he was already aware that, hey, you know, the guy, the promoter told him, hey, we want everybody, the ladies, kind of, especially on TV, kind of lay your licks in pretty solid, you know, and not really hurt anybody and stuff like that. And he just one of the guys, you know, bless his heart, he helped me got over, you know, and that's what we was trying to do, is to get over. And I wanted to impress the people that, hey, I was a tough little cookie, whatever, and stuff like that. But I apologized to him and stuff like that, and he said he understood and all that. So that's why I don't really feel bad, because I usually don't, you know, I don't work that way. Now, if we was working somewhere every night, then off the camera and stuff like that, then, you know, we'd probably have some fantastic matches together and stuff like that. I mean, but everybody was like that back in the day. We was hungry trying to get over, and that's the way we got over. If promoter gave you a chance to do something, man, you better get out there and do your very, very best. And I have, and guys have really rubbed it in on me. I have took some punches from a lot of guys and stuff like that, because they, you know, they was trying to get over and stuff like that. But I understood. That's the nature. That's part of the business and stuff like that. And, you know, as long as we're not knocking his tooth out and breaking some ribs and stuff like that, and, you know, breaking his leg, his arm, or anything like that, you know, his eyes, knocking his eyes out, you know, that would be too far, you know, if that would have happened. But other than that, you know, I just, you know, just out of just trying to get that established to the fans and stuff like that, trying to draw money, actually trying to get in that spot to, okay, Coco, man, he's tough. He can go in there and just wrestle with anybody.
I tell you what, Robbie, when I watched that, that's that Coco Beware is someone I'd pay money to see after that beating he put on the Patriot. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think you would get up from that, Matt.
He understood it, and like I said, I talked to him and stuff like that, and he, you know, I told him I have to lay it in a little bit or whatever, and that's the reason why I got along with everybody, because I told him exactly what's going to happen and stuff like that, you know, because I want to be honest with the guy. I didn't want to go out there and say, hey, you know, promoter tells me one thing, then I go out there and do another. Because they told me when I came into Memphis, Tennessee, I was green as grass could be. And they told Joe LaDuc and said, hey, don't give this kid nothing. Eat him up. Beat the hell out of him and everything like that. And Joe LaDuc he came back and he said, kid, they want me to just, hey, just eat you up now. So don't think I'm just trying to take advantage of you, whatever, you know, we're just trying to get over. And you know what? I helped Joe eat me up. I even helped him because when he hit me, man, I flew like he knocked me, I mean, from hell and back, you know, and I felt like I was landing out on the third row, you know, from my fans and things. I feel like they was picking me up from the third row. He hit me so hard. I mean, knocked me completely over out of the ring. But I was, you know, at this part of the business, you know.
On that note, you know, you've told us everything. You've told us what you're up to now. And you told us how it ended and why it ended. But you also said you do bookings and you also do an occasional match. If people want to get a hold of Coco Beware, the Birdman Coco Beware, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, you have to go through my great promoter that set this up, Scott Wider. Wider, y'all know him?
Yes.
Yes, you have to go through Scott and everything. And Scott is, he's another great guy that I met. And I'm trying to help him, make money to do whatever. And because, you know, I'm the spokesman for Scott, you know, just trying to tell him, hey, Scott, you know, don't spend this kind of money. Don't spend that kind of money. Cause I know I have been there before. I seen guys lose a lot of money in this business. And I'll say it's like this. I tell all the promoters all over the world, I tell them all when I come and work for them, I represent them. You know, as long as we can draw, Coco Beware is still in business. When you stop drawing, then Coco Beware is going to be sitting at home. So everybody out there, everybody needs to think of that.
Yeah.
Because it's very important. This don't come there because you're gonna get your payoff. You're gonna get your payoff regardless. But let's think about the promoters and the underneath talent that he has. They need a payoff also to continue to bring you back. See, if they don't make money, they can't keep bringing you back in.
This is true.
And you can't be on everybody's card every weekend. Go ahead.
No, yeah, just before we let you go, I wanted to ask you, whatever ended up happening to Frankie?
Well, my senior Frank is still, he's gone on to heaven, but I have another one. But I call him Frankie, and I should have just not exposed Frankie what happened. But Frankie got caught in a house fire. We was in church and stuff like that. And then, man, it was a big tragedy that when we got home, one of my neighbors was in the backyard. He was down on his knees, and he was just looking up to me, and tears were just rolling. Coco, I am so sorry that I couldn't take care of your child. I couldn't save your child.
And I said, well, all my kids was in church with us. And he said, yeah, but Coco, there was a child was hollering, let me out, let me out, let me out. I said, yes, he was like a child. And then that's when tears started coming out of my eyes. And we just sitting down in the backyard on the ground and was talking about it. I said, he wasn't a child of mine, but he was my parent. He said, when he gets tired, when he's in the cage, when he wants to come out of the cage, he'll say, let me out, let me out. So we would let him out so he could perch on the cage and all that stuff. Yeah.
He would say, let me out.
Yeah. He said, let me out, let me out.
It's hard to turn that down. Right, Robbie.
Oh my God.
I mean, you know, we just, you know, and then, that was the hurting part when the fireman came over and they brought him in a little brown bag and stuff like that. And they gave him to me and, you know, this is getting touchy now. I never opened the bag and I just thought about all the fans all over the country. I thought about all the promoters, all of you guys that supported Coco Beware and Frankie, that it was over. And I didn't, you know, I said, what I'm going to do now? I said, it's like a good luck charm. It's gone. You know, how am I going to make it now? And just so lucky that God sent us an angel, and there was a military guy that was moving, and he had a parrot identical. He had a blue and gold macaw parrot, and he put it on Facebook. My wife, she could do the Facebook and all that, and she saw this guy, this military fellow, and he was going overseas, but he wanted to sell his bird. And then once we got in touch with him, the cage and all, oh man, I told him the story of what happened, and he said, "You know what? I have seen y'all on WWE TV." He said, "You know what? I want you to have this bird. Take the cage and all. You owe me nothing." And that's how I end up getting another blue and gold macaw back. And I named him Frankie. And he just another carbon copy of Frankie.
That's an amazing story. That is just amazing that another Frankie came into your life after the loss of your beloved friend.
Yep.
Well, and when you're going out and doing appearances, you bring the new Frankie out with you?
Whenever they request him, you know, because the airlines charge a little bit. And I talk to the promoter if it's too much on them and stuff like that. And I understand some of them can afford it, some of them can't. And I asked him, I said, well, is there any way, do you know of a pet shop around there? They might have a blue and gold macaw bird that we can rent, that you guys can rent for one night and just go there and be a lot cheaper for you guys. And all the little fans wants to do, all they want to see is that blue and gold macaw bird come out there with me, and they get the whole package that they got in WrestleMania 3, where they got every time I stepped in the ring with WWE, they get the whole package, the whole Coco Beware and Frankie. Wow,
that is amazing, and what an amazing interview this has been, Robbie. Thank you so much for joining us, man. You've told us everything. You've held nothing back. And this has probably been one of my, if not my favorite interviews we've ever done. Are you feeling the same way, Robbie?
Yeah, we really appreciate your time. This is great.
Well, man, thank you guys. And you guys ones that keep Coco Beware and the rest of the guys alive. Believe not, you know, you may not think you powerful as Vince McMahon, but you really are. Because in my book anyway, he's not God. Hey, God made him just like he made all of us. He's still a man. The day he come in this world with nothing, he's going out in this world with nothing. So how can he be any better than the next person? And I love, and I still love Vince McMahon to death. I don't hate him. Vince McMahon, I'm telling you right now, I hope somebody hear this. I do not hate WWE. I still love WWE. I wish I could come back and do something, but not in the ring. I don't want to come in the ring. I just want to come on a, I'm getting excited. Just to come out there and just let the people see me around the world with Frankie and I. We'll just come out there and go around the ring and do the Birdman and back up the stage. I don't want to get jumped on. I don't want to wrestle nobody. I don't want to do anything. I just want to use that gimmick that what they helped me to build.
Well, Robbie, I like to say we've heard it all. And man, oh man, did we hear it all. And apparently Frankie died.
Yeah, well, listen, before the show, I'm not going to lie, while he was telling the story, I pulled it up again on my phone. And that beating that he gives to that Patriot guy is just unbelievable. It looked like he was beating up a dead body at one point.
Yeah. Well, I hope they didn't put it in a brown paper bag. But
if that's how rough it was back then, I'm glad I started in the 2000s.
Well, that's what they did with Frankie. So, you know, but I would encourage you guys, all you have to do is just go to YouTube and check out, just like search Coco Beware, and it says Coco Beware destroys a jobber in Memphis, and it is worth the watch, and it lets you know how rough it was back in the days. Robbie, I don't think you would have lasted long as a wrestler if you took a beating like that from Coco.
You know, you're not the first person to say that. Tommy Dreamer says I wouldn't have lasted back then all the time, but you know what? I don't believe it. I think I would have. And you know what else I think is going to last? Why It Ended, because Why It Ended is one of the hottest wrestling podcasts out there right now, and our Twitter is at Why It Ended, our Instagram is at Why It Ended, our YouTube is whereitended.com, we got shirts on Pro Wrestling Tees, and our Patreon page is Getting Caught Up. So Matt, what do you got to say about that?
I have nothing to say. Actually, that's not true. I always have something to say. And I will say this, if you want to follow Robbie on Twitter, it's at Robbie E Impact, and I'm at Matt Coon Music. But it's Robbie E, so you know he's up to something. What are you up to this weekend, Robbie?
This weekend, you can find me Saturday morning teaching a seminar and wrestling in Pawtucket, Rhode Island for MAW. And then at night, because of course I'm Robbie E, you know I got a double shot, I'll be in Bethany, Connecticut for Northeast Wrestling defending my tag team championship there with Cam Zagami.
Now, it's not true that you forgot your belt at a show, right? Someone tweeted me that you forgot.
It was for Northeast Wrestling. I was wrestling Billy Gunn. It was a singles match. So, yeah, no one brought out their titles on the show. It was just, you know, wasn't a tag match.
You don't walk around the airport with your title around your belt?
Nah, it's a pain to carry around.
Well, that is the burden that Robbie E carries. It's tough to carry those belts. Well, we will see you next week, guys. Make sure to keep supporting us. Get on iTunes, subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and always tell your friends about Why It Ended with Robbie E.